Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Today's date is the 20th of November, 2021. This is Carol Lucille Kokash Babcock, and I am the veteran. I will be answering selected questions for this day. My adult children live in Duluth, Minnesota, York, Nebraska, and Kansas City, Missouri. None are here for this interview. A short description of my time in the military. The Navy recruiter came to my school a few days after I turned 18. He said, "Join the Navy and see the world." I know it's a slogan now, but I didn't know then. I hadn't seen much more than the farm and had looked at a map. There was a lot more to see. I knew room and board would be provided, so I signed. This was late in Vietnam. I still heard chatter of going to Canada. I felt like I needed to step up and represent my family in the military service, too. During avionics school in Millington, Tennessee, one instructor had been on the Pueblo, captured in 1968 by North Korea. I'd already seen shrapnel wounds in my sister's friends who came back from Vietnam. I didn't let myself be afraid or ever even dwell on it. I signed my name so they owned me. My job was to obey orders, period. I met some of the most wonderful people in my years of service, and I was never a victim of any sort of sexual misconduct. I was raised with brothers. I had five stepbrothers and many male and female cousins. This was a familiar community to me. Women's Lib was happening off base somewhere, but I wasn't tuned into the society movements. I just wanted to fly. So I did the list of tasks required to qualify as flight crew. When I did, articles and photos hit the hometown newspaper and a local one near San Jose, California. I also recently found an article in the Miami Herald in 1973 of me and Lee Alverson, another female, the only other female in the squadron. I was oblivious to the idea that my cool job might be good PR for the squadron. It was funny how I could be so ignorant at age 19. My squadron was VP-31. It was an anti-submarine warfare squadron, training squadron, based in Moffett Field in Hangar 1, near San Jose, Mountain View, California, between San Jose and San Francisco. The years I spent in the air were peaceful, amazing, hard work. I did not complain. I had to empty the urinal when we had a long flight, even though I couldn't use it because I was a girl and it was designed for men. But I did my job, whatever the job was assigned to me on that particular flight, because I wanted to fly. I sat in the rear end of the plane facing backwards on the port or the starboard side and reported to the pilots by way of radio what I saw out the window, if there was any threat, any boat, any other aircraft, and I would say what it was to the best of my understanding. And on a clock, 1 o'clock high, 2 o'clock low, according to what the pilot would see, so he could find it and be aware that there was traffic or an issue. That was what I did. It was great. There are pictures in my files of me in the flight suit with the helmet, with the gear. But mostly it was just fun. We would take short flights and long flights, training over the Pacific, flying and testing pilots so they could land without jarring the plane too much. They could learn. It's a big four-engine turboprop, the P-3 Orion, and it was a great time to be in the service. Eventually, I got married and went the way I got transferred to San Diego, which was 400 miles from my house that we bought and the husband, and now my brother Paul, who was also on the base in an active squadron on the base. So I chose to get out after 4.5 years of service. The things were not as smooth in the last times. There was a lot of drug usage on them from the Navy personnel, and not exactly trustworthy as far as maintenance of the planes go. So it was a good time to get out. And I had been married by then 2.5 years, and we were ready to start a family. He was due to get out shortly after I did, and so we could start. We knew it was not good to start a family when you weren't in the service, so we put that on hold for the first couple, 3 years of our marriage to start that family later. End of question one. The second question I'll address is, has illness changed me? I don't like this question because I don't like to admit illness. But yes, in 2001, I got the flu vaccine, and a couple months later, I did get a disease called Guillain-Barré. It's a paralytic kind of disease, and apparently the medium that the vaccine was in went to my spinal cord area and my spinal fluid. So had that, was misdiagnosed a lot with that. This is where I ran into the gender discrimination as a newly graduated college degree in geoscience. I had my first white collar job, and because I didn't want to risk losing that beautiful white collar job as a planning GIS manager for a planning company, I got the flu vaccine. I ended up not being able to drive. I got the shot in October, and I wasn't able to drive by January or lift anything or carry anything or go up and down stairs, or it just came on burning and a neuromuscular problem of communication and burning and partial paralysis. I had two relapses over 3 years. The diagnoses from different medical doctors span the spectrum of misdiagnosis. One thought it was a sleeping disorder. One thought it was a emotional disorder. That no one checked my spinal fluid with a spinal tap until it was too late and it was settled in. But I actually got guided to the right direction from a female nurse that walked me down the hall and mentioned it. So I did different testing. However, I'm not afraid of dying. I have been close to dying during that time. When you see your inability to move or breathe or chew or swallow, and so it was close. But I did get, since then, I did get my papers in order. The deed to the house is already taken care of. The beneficiaries are lined up. The power of attorneys are lined up. But that just gave me peace of mind. So that's the way the illness has changed me. I am ready, but I love living. I love cooking. I love baking. I love driving mostly west or northwest on an open highway where I can see the sky. I love the Veterans Administration's care and my primary doc, and the staff will discuss anything with me. I go natural whenever I can because that is the methodology and the protocols that I follow to get well. My little sister was part of that. My neighbor who does acupuncture was part of that. And I heard God tell me that if I put my head in the dirt, I would get well. And so I began to garden, bend over and pull weeds, bend over and water things. And learning what I know now is that that bending over was circulating my spinal fluid and helping me heal along with the supplements and natural therapies I was doing. I go natural whenever I can. I eat whole foods, unprocessed. I have a greenhouse and I grow my own greens. I take a protocol of supplements designed to stay well and cut the inflammation in general and keep my pH above 7, above a 6.5, close to a 7. I've had my hair tested in a lab to see what minerals I'm dumping. I don't follow trends, but I will adapt my routines as I learn more. Basically, I will live life fully until I do die, and I will die with a smile on my face, spiritually. This next section is about spiritual beliefs. Do I believe in miracles? Was there a profound moment in my life? This discussion is actually deep and long and developed. I wrote a book, published it in March of 2020, called Turn and Walk, An Unexpected Quest. I published it through Ingram Spark and Amazon. So that is available in a digital format and a print format. It tells more of the story. However, nothing can tell the whole story because I live with it daily. I was raised without any knowledge or discussion of God or Jesus. The first I heard was my husband's religion. There was no piano, no instrument of any kind, no missionaries, no overarching government. That church that he was a part of was very focused on purity of the church, and we studied the Bible and commentaries a lot. I bought into it and lived that accepted legalistic way for decades. I wanted to do right. However, I did hurt my kids as I was living right. It was challenging to obey the husband's edicts and yet come across to my kids as the enforcer. So yes, it was, I would say, abusive the way that we were, that I was harsh with the kids, but I was passionately wanting to do the best I knew how to do. I was just on the wrong track. I became more, and I apologize again to my adult children for putting up and not defending them against what the abuses that came with the religious fundamentalists. I became more and more intolerant of that tradition and religious propaganda in my late 40s. I had always asked more than my share of questions, but by then I had begun to see that there were gatekeepers in the system. I also began to be intensely interested in knowing the character of God, not the details of the Bible. Learning the Bible didn't mean experiencing God. I stepped in fully into the action when I asked God at age 50 what he intended me to be when I was born. With that question, things began to happen. Maybe they happened before, but I didn't notice. But now I was open to seeing and experiencing and hearing more of the answer, because I didn't want to limit God in any way. The voice of God, I began to hear. I began to have dreams. The voice of God told me things, answered prayers before they were spoken. God showed me visions that were communicated without words. I published the Turn and Walk, and am now working on a paraphrase of Hebrews, Romans, and John. Those three books together seem to be the epitome of one theme that runs through all three books, and I want to keep it simple, is because the word or the action of belief and faith out of belief seems to be a theme that whoever wrote them is trying to get through to all. It's a theme that runs through the New Testament, and I just want to eliminate all the nitpicking religious crap that gets drawn in, and I just want to paraphrase what God shows and tries to tell us how simple just believing is. Yes, I do believe. I live in faith. I am grateful for God's mercy, grateful for God's grace and God's love. God is not a gender. He's not a she or a he. It's a deity. And I just want to continue to have a deep spiritual experience until I hop over to the other dimension where it is timeless and spaceless and all is love. The next question is, how many careers or jobs have I had? When I graduated high school, it was 1971. The only careers available to women that I was aware of were teacher, secretary, nurse, or farm wife. After boot camp, I was told my scores were good enough that I could go into aviation electronics. It took me by surprise, but I had heard that nurses, which is what my plan was, spent all 4 years of the enlistment in one location. That did not match the join the Navy and see the world, so I jumped at the opportunity to go into aviation. 9 months of A school in Millington, Tennessee. I got orders to Moffett Field. I enjoyed all my years there. Made flight crew, got my wings. I married toward the end of my enlistment, and that changed my career to wife and mother. 34 years later on, the husband got a job in Nebraska, and we began to move town to town for the next 15 years. We settled in Kansas City, and I began college at the age of 44. I graduated in 2001. The first job I had was a substitute teacher for the last 2 years of my college education. I got that job I worked part-time as a library steward or library page, putting books on the shelf, but the substitute teacher was descriptive of a real job. And I'd worked both of those jobs in order to pay for the bachelor's degree. So I wanted to make sure that all of my education was my doing, that I did not want to credit the spouse with so much as a dime of investment. He was not even aware that I was going to college. I told him, but he didn't remember, or it didn't matter. After I got my degree in 2001, in May, I went to Europe and backpacked for 2 weeks and rode the train around Europe. When I got back, I worked as a GIS manager for that planning firm until the flu shot paralyzed me. 2.5 years later, when I could again hold the steering wheel of a car, I talked to my old employer at the community college, and I got a job tutoring. I worked that job and loved it for 7 years. Tutoring students in whatever they needed, mostly English and geosciences, some basic math, and some biology. After that, when I got a full degree, or when I came out of that, managing the science lab, and they closed down the science lab at that community college. But at the same moment, I got a job as an adjunct GIS instructor at a nearby university, Park University. But I also got a part-time job as a career coach at City Union Mission, working with homeless clients in a 12-month program. The GIS adjunct, GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems. It's a computer science, but it is mapping and technology and learning how to do that. So I enjoyed teaching adult students that technology. At the City Union Mission, I stayed there for a little over a year, but their conservative religious gatekeepers became too restrictive. So when I saw movement and the opening in the staff at a community college one of the five campuses that I originally took my training at, I jumped at it. They were cutting finances, and so they were laying off a lot of old full-time employees, and I knew that that meant that they were hiring part-time employees. So because of the economy. So I snagged one of those jobs, another part-time job, 19 and a half hours per week. It wasn't enough to pay the mortgage and utilities, so I added on. By then I was divorced or divorcing, and he left, and I still had the mortgage on the house and all the repairs on the house and all the utilities on the house, so I still had a lot to pay off as a monthly cost. So that one job, 19 and a half hours, didn't pay the bills. So I added on middle school and high school tutoring, a program called AVID, which is a college prep tutoring program. I worked hours at three high schools, three middle schools, on any day that I didn't have hours at the college. I interviewed at that same campus. I interviewed for adjunct GIS instructor and got it. My task there was to coordinate the GIS curriculum with the AutoCAD curriculum, so that people that were being trained to work at engineering firms would have both AutoCAD for interior blueprint work and GIS for exterior terrain and geographic work. So that was a great job. The interview took 10 minutes. I had my khaki pants on and my black shirt on and looked like a teacher and talked too fast, but got the job and did that for the next 5 years. I also added on freshman orientation and career development to my classes that I taught there. I taught my last class at the Business and Technology campus in January of 2016. I guess I would describe my career as ad hoc educator. I love teaching, but in the way of equipping people with what they need to live well. I love filling gaps of understanding so that they feel successful. I see myself more as an education or a training facilitator, and I love the diagnostic process of trying to meet their need with whatever I can find, whatever language I can use, however I can make them feel successful and be successful. The next section is a short but necessary topic. The reason I'm including this is so that others, a generation or two down, can relate, so that they can see their own life in reflective to this. It's about relationships or the marriage or something. I met a nice guy in the Navy. He was 19, but too young to know the right questions. But I was 19, but too young to know the right questions to ask. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He didn't cuss. I assumed I was marrying my best friend, and I would finally not be alone. That was a mistake to think that way. We married 4 months after we met. He didn't proactively sin, but he never did engage in the relationship. We moved 19 times in our first 17 years of marriage. Following his job and having 3 babies, our first baby, we were married in 73. The first baby was in 76, next one 77, and the last one in 83. I love my 3 bright souls intensely. The boys and I were a tight crew through all those new locations, and then one location before we settled in Kansas City, my daughter was born. So we came here when she was 4. She doesn't have the same experience of all the moves that the boys do. The spouse left this house and me on our 39th anniversary. He set up house somewhere else. He filed for divorce. I could have, but God told me not to. I still don't understand why, but that's God's business, not mine. The kids were grown and married with families, but it hit hard. They turned me out. They censored me. I still, to this day, have not seen my one set of grandchildren since 2012. And so this is 9 years that I haven't seen them. Haven't been allowed to spend time with them. I asked God what the deal was about the family, because all I ever wanted was a strong family. That was my cry. But God showed me that I do have a strong family, because each of those units, the son in Nebraska, the son here, the daughter in Minnesota, each have strong families. And so I do have a strong family, and I will believe God's version of that. I will work on mercy, on grace, on looking honestly at my own contribution to the, I don't know what I could have done different. I probably did a lot of, I know I did a lot of things wrong. I just don't know how I could have done differently. But at the same time, I now understand that he was incapable of doing anything differently. He wouldn't touch. He wouldn't talk. He wouldn't show any affection. But he is very self-satisfied and very confident in his own way of understanding the world. And so may God have mercy on us both. There are 2 most important persons in my life because of their influence. My stepdad, Bob, loved my mom. He married her at age 43. Mom was 40. He was a resilient creative person. He loved being in the open pastures with his horse and his dog and the cows. Whatever the weather conditions were, he just prepared for it. He was smart with the natural elements, but not book educated, though he read The Western Horseman from tip to tail whenever it came in. That's a magazine. He was also a veteran, the youngest of 9 children. He was 2 when his dad died from a passing train. I think he was hanging, the story goes he was hanging a mailbag, and the arm of the train caught his head. He joined the Army, or joined the Navy at age 17. And he was born in 1927. Robert Lewis Buttle. And he joined the Navy when he was 17. He located and on a ship, on ships in the Pacific, talked a lot about loading and unloading cargo in Japan. But he was too young, and when they found it, this is his story, and when they found out he was too young, they kicked him out of the Navy. But he turned 18 and joined the Army. So his beauty was that he loved life in all forms. Another thing that he did well was persevere. When life changed, he changed with it. When he had high blood pressure, he stopped drinking. When he got new teeth, he stopped chewing tobacco. And this is an older gentleman in his 70s when these things happened. So I have an appreciation of him being so resilient, and the perseverance that he showed, and the just loving man. He especially loved my babies, loved my children, and loved me. He considered me his daughter, not his stepdaughter. Love, Bob. Another person that had a deep impact on me is my uncle, Thomas Francis Morrissey. He was another veteran. He was in the Army for some time, not a long time. I don't know whether he did one hitch or two. He was the went to the 8th grade. He was raised in a Catholic family on the south side of Chicago. His first job was 5 cents a week at the stockyards. He has a sister Mary. Both of these gentlemen are deceased. He had a sister Mary, and she had a kid, and that kid was some general in the military and was a friend and has written books about JFK, John F. Kennedy, and that realm of political leaders around that time. His name is James Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, as the author. Uncle Tom met Aunt Evelyn. Evelyn is my mother's oldest sister. So he met Evelyn in the Army, and they married at age 35. She was in the Army in Okinawa. Uncle Tom is self-educated, and he ended up writing technical manuals for the Minuteman missiles. He also, once he retired, he went back to work at in Los Angeles on political campaigns for the municipal, for the mayor of the town. His effect on me was his sweet love for me and my family. Uncle Tom and Aunt Evelyn always brought dried fruit from outside world when they came to reunions on the farm or Christmas. What Tom and Evelyn gave me was hope in a world outside of the farm. The word proactive wasn't used then, but that's what they both continued to model to their death. And Evelyn died at 89. I was blessed to be with her the last 4 months as she surrendered to cancer. Skin cancer from radiation for her psoriasis. She ended up with cancer in her lung, but it was skin cancer. She's a beautiful woman and very principled. Love you, Aunt Evelyn. The last section is lessons I've learned. I've learned a lot of lessons. One of the lessons is that if we hold on to bitterness, it has a price. I choose not to. Another lesson is our time in this dimension might end at any moment. Car wreck, COVID, whatever. I hope to see and say goodbye and have a party and know I'm going. But if not, this is part of the celebration of life for me, is to put my story, or a tiny part of my story, to on record, to give someone else hope or some kind of inspiration to do something that they may not have the courage to do unless they see someone else do it. I want to be a tool to encourage others. I bake a lot of homemade bread. I eat a lot of vegetables and grow a lot of greens. The way I live is somewhat for me and somewhat because of doing an experiment of life and trying to model what I understand. When I understand a new truth and accept it as true, I want to change my life to align with that new truth. Whether it's a physical truth or a spiritual truth, I want to adapt my mind to move forward into that new understanding. I don't want to be stuck. I want to live until I die. Thank you for your time, and I hope this is useful to someone. Carol Kokash Babcock, signing off.